Well, let's get into this. In Mark 5, we're going to read a story. And it's going to be about a dad. We're going to read about a dad today. And we're going to see what we can learn from a dad, Jairus. Mark writes about him and Luke writes about him. And we're going to read from Mark 5 today. We're going to start with 21. Yes, 21. When Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up and on seeing him, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live." And he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. Okay? Are you seeing this picture with me today? Then a woman, verse 25, who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she thought, "If I just touch his garments, I will get well." Immediately the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see the woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Yeah, okay, the reason that I wanted to read all of this, and we're going to continue here in a minute, but did you forget Jairus is still there? One of the things that I believe Jairus exemplifies that we can learn from is patience. Lesson number one, patience. Jairus goes to Jesus and he says, "Listen, my daughter is at the point of death. My daughter, she's 12 years old. She could die at any minute. And this is his last ditch effort." He goes and finds Jesus and says, "Can you come and lay your hands on her? If you do, she'll be well and she'll live. Otherwise, she's going to die." Think about that gut-wrenching situation that this father is in. Jesus says, "Okay, let's go." And so he goes. And of course, you got the crowds pressing in on him, and they're touching, and they're trying to get healing too, and all of this stuff. And, you know, I know that Jairus is just trying to, "Listen, we got to get Jesus to my house ASAP." And he's getting him through the crowd, and people are touching. Jesus stops and says, "Wait, someone touch me." Now, if I'm Jairus, we don't know the whole story here, but it seems like Jairus was very patient. But if I'm Jairus, I'm like, yeah, somebody touched you. Come on, Jesus, come on. You know, I'm grabbing him by the hand saying, "Let's go. Let's go. My daughter is at the point of death. Somebody touched me." Even the disciples are like, "Jesus, everybody's touching you." And he's like, "No, someone really touched me." And so he turns around and says to this lady, you know, and we go through this whole story of this lady being healed. The lady says, "I knew that if I could just touch the hem of your garment." Jairus is like, "Come on, Jesus. Yeah. We got you. You're healed. Fantastic. Praise the Lord. Come on, let's go. Let's get on out of here. We got to get to my house. My daughter's at the point of death." I think that's how I would have been. I don't mind, or I should say I probably wouldn't mind being a wee bit rude if the life of my daughter is at stake. Okay. You got your healing. Come on. Come on, Jesus. So anyway, Jairus is very patient. You know, I think that we sometimes lose sight of the importance of patience. I'm going to look at a couple of scriptures here about patience. Good old Jairus. Galatians 5:22 says, patience is one of the fruits of the Spirit. We talked about that last week. The Spirit of God that dwells on the inside of you, that's what he produces, patience. 1 Corinthians 13:4 says, love is patient. Love is patient. So to the people we love the most, we should be the most patient. Right? Huh? Okay, here's another patient. Hebrews 6:11-13. Think about this verse. Hebrews 6:11-13. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end. Verse 12, so that you will not be sluggish, but imitators. Be imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Through faith and patience inherit the promises. We hear a lot of teaching in about faith, but we don't hear a lot of teaching about patience sometimes. It's one of those things that we feel like it's a characteristic that, you know, you either got it or you don't. And, you know, we all have heard the joke, Lord, give me patience, but give it to me right now. Patience. They inherited the promises of God with faith and with patience. Sometimes I believe that maybe we don't always give our faith enough patience to operate correctly. All right? Think about that. Do you give your faith enough patience to operate correctly? Stephen Furtick, a pastor, pointed this out one time. When Peter was walking on the water to Jesus, Jesus was out there barefoot skiing, the first barefoot skier that we ever hear of in the Bible. That's what Jesus was. He invented it. But he said Peter walked to him for a while, and then Peter began to sink, and Jesus saved him. And he said in Matthew 14:31, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And one thing that Stephen pointed out is he said, maybe it wasn't that he had small-sized faith. He did walk on the water. It's got to be a pretty good-sized faith. Maybe it was that his faith was short of time. In other words, he didn't believe long enough, and he began to doubt. If he would have added patience with his faith, maybe Peter would have walked on the water a little bit longer. We don't know. But let's give our faith a little more patience. Okay, moving on. So, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. Verse 35, we're getting back to the story of the dad, Jairus. While he was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official, saying, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore? But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, do not be afraid any longer, only believe. And he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing. And entering in, he said to them, why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep. They began laughing at him. But putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. Taking the child by hand, he said to her, Talitha cum, which translates translated means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Immediately the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old, and immediately they were completely astounded. And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and he said that something should be given to her to eat. Given her to eat. Here's another thing that I realize about Jairus. Jairus displayed humility, something that us fathers and all of us in some way can learn. Humility. Jairus says that he was a synagogue official. What these guys did is they really didn't have a part to play in a service, but they made everybody be in their positions. They made the service happen. They scheduled everything. They was the boss. They were the boss of everybody that had something to do in the temple. So the priests and everything, the candle lighters and all of that. Jairus was one of the guys that was in charge of it all. They were like the main head honcho of the temple. History shows us that synagogue officials were some of the most respected men in a community. Jairus. Now let's also add in this fact. You got Jairus pictured in your mind? Add in this fact. About this time in the history of Jesus, we see the synagogue officials, the synagogue workers, everybody in the Jewish religion began to kind of frown upon the teaching that Jesus was doing. Think about this. Jesus was coming in with a completely new religion. I mean, goodness sakes, he's even including Gentiles. It's unheard of, unthinkable. It was very difficult for Gentiles to be a part of the Jewish faith in the Old Testament. It was possible, but it was difficult, and they never truly treated them 100%. And now Jesus is saying that he's the Son of God. They're expecting a Messiah that's going to put in a kingdom and be a part of a kingdom and free them and take them off to some great land where they're going to set up a throne and all this good stuff, a physical kingdom. And that wasn't Jesus' idea at all. The synagogue people are the ones that are about to get really angry and upset with Jesus. And here this is Jairus, this guy, and he is very well respected in his community. And he humbles himself and he goes to this guy, Jesus, who holds no office of anywhere. I don't think he had a degree from any college or even took a whole lot of training probably from the temple preachers and teachers. And he didn't have any official position in the temple. And now Jairus is going to him, and it says that he fell at his feet, verse 22 and 23, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly. Jairus showed humility. Matthew 23:12 says, whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. James 4:6 says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. As we raise our kids, our grandkids, and our families, there's times that you're going to have to be patient, and there's times that you're going to have to be humble. We're going to have to humble ourselves before God and say, God, in this situation, I don't have it. I don't think I got it. I'm going to need you, and I can't do it without you. Here's something else we learned from Jairus or Jesus. This is something we learned from Jesus in this situation. Verses 38 to 40 talks about this. When they get to Jairus' house, there's a commotion, people weeping and wailing. they laughed at Jesus, and Jesus kicked them out. Create godly culture as a father. Don't be afraid to go against culture. Now, I'm going to say this. I've been saying this to fathers, but mothers, all of us really are included here. Oppose and prevent dangerous and ungodly culture in your household. Right? You ready? Don't allow it in your house. Let me paint you a picture of what's going on at Jairus' house. And this comes from studies of history. Death in those times, a huge deal in those days and in the Jewish religion, in that religion. They had a signal that was put forth when someone died at someone's house. You actually had a wailer. Not a whaler, but a wailer. In other words, when someone at the house died, there would be this loud wailing, and it was to let the community know that someone had passed away. And people heard it from all over. As a matter of fact, wailers were hired people. They would hire people to come in and wail and mourn and weep and cry. There were actually rules and regulations about mourning the dead. They would tear their hair, cry. They would rend their clothes or tear their clothes. As a matter of fact, even in the tearing of your clothes, it had to be done a certain way. You couldn't tear your clothes below the navel. The husband and the wife in this case, or the people closest to the relative that died, would tear their clothes on the right side over their heart. Friends, families, neighbors would tear their clothes on the left side. Women had to tear their clothes in private. Get this. But they had to get their undergarment, I think's what they call it. I made that so much worse than it needed to be, John. They would take their undergarment, because they wore like a gown, like a sheet gown, and then the outer garment. They would take that inner garment and flip it around backwards. So they would wear their undergarment backwards, and then they would tear their clothes over their heart area. You had to wear that garment for 30 days. Yeah. You had to, you could sew it up after 7 days, but it had to be done kind of, it had to be done poorly so that everyone knew that it was a rended garment. So after 7 days, you could fix it, but it had to be, kind of bad, and you had to wear it for 30 days. Guys couldn't, you couldn't shave if you were in mourning. You couldn't shave. You couldn't eat at a table. You had to eat while sitting on the floor, and your chair had to be your table. As a matter of fact, they said you're not supposed to give yourself any comfort or joy during the time of your mourning. Remember, I'm painting a picture of what Jairus' house looks like. You couldn't leave the house for a certain amount of days. You couldn't leave the city for a certain amount of days. Oh, they said that you couldn't read the Law and the Prophets or their Bible back then. They weren't allowed to read the Bible if you were mourning, except for Jeremiah, Job, and Lamentations. Because the rest of the books might give you joy. Isn't that funny? The other interesting thing is, they didn't have running water, but they had barrels or buckets or different containers of water. In the house of the ones who were mourning, and three houses on each direction of that house had to dump out all of your water and go get fresh water, because it was said the angel of death procured death by dipping his sword into a nearby container of water. And so the house of the dead, and then three houses on each side. So your block street had to empty out all of their water. Isn't that interesting? So there is a commotion going on. Are you getting it? There is a commotion. They probably have flute players. It was said that even the poorest of people had to pay at least two flute players to be at their spouse's funeral. Something about the flutes and the wailing. So they had flute players. There was people crying. There was this commotion. Amidst the chaos, Jesus brings calm. I think, bring Jesus into your home, you bring calm into your home. You change the culture of the world. You know, Romans 12:2 says, be ye not conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good, acceptable, and perfect. Change culture. Don't be afraid to go against the culture. Now, I know if you have teenage sons or daughters, that's a little more difficult. But don't be afraid to change and go against culture. 1 John 2:15 through 17 says, do not love the world, nor the things in the world. For if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. Listen, the world is passing away. Also its lusts. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. We need to make sure that we are creating a godly culture in our home. Amen? This nation, this state, this city, our home, our neighborhood will look differently if we begin to bring God into our home and make that our culture. Because what we're finding is that things seem a little bit more natural that might not should be natural. The things that we see on regular commercial TV these days, they would not have allowed on regular TV 5-10 years ago. Man, I sound old. But it's true, right? Make a godly culture. The next thing that we see that Jairus does, I put this, protect and include your trusted influences. In Mark 5:37, we go back to the story, and he says this. Jesus allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And we get to skip to verse 40. By putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. I learned this from him. Be aware of the influences in your family life and get rid of those that do not exemplify peace and love, calm and comfort, that do not exemplify God. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Not the band. They're okay. Just teasing. I don't know. All right. Bad company corrupts good morals. Be careful of who you choose and what you choose to come into your household. It may be music, it may be TV, it may be social media. What? Somebody else? People? Yes, definitely. Be careful who you allow into your home. Your family has influencers. They do. Whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, your family has influencers. Choose wisely who is going to influence your family. Hebrews 10:24 through 25. The flip side of that coin is don't isolate yourself. That's the danger of being too, when you you're keeping everybody out and keeping everybody out, and pretty soon you just have this huge wall around you and you're not letting anybody in. Christianity is a group effort. It's a group exercise. We got to do this together. Proverbs says, iron sharpens iron, so man sharpens another man. Even when Jesus taught them how to pray, he said, our Father who art in heaven. He's praying as a group. Hebrews said, we walk by faith. We join together like that. Hebrews 10:24 through 25. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So we're in this together. We got to be careful who we let in and who we let out. Jesus brought these certain guys that he picked for this task. And the mother and the father. And what did he do with everybody else? He kicked them out. Right? Matthew 18:20. For where two or three have gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst. Carefully choose who your family's influencers are. Reinforce that influence and protect it. Okay? Here's another thing that Jairus did. And this may be a stretch, but this is a good one. Bring Jesus. Jairus brought Jesus home. And one of the things I think that it's too easy sometimes for Christians to do is we want to get people in church. Now listen, that's a good thing. We do want to get people in church. But that's a poor substitute for doing what God told us to do. Go. We are to take Jesus to people. Whether it be your family, your neighbors, your coworkers, take Jesus to them. Then you can get them in church. We're supposed to be like Christ. Where did Christ do most of his ministering that we know of in the Bible? In the streets, outside, at people's homes. He did some in the temple, but most of it is done outside the temple walls. Take Jesus. Mark 16:15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all. And I read this a lot because it impacts me. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 5:20, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. We beg you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. Take Jesus to the people. Last thing I'm going to talk about that Jairus did. Jairus had a kind of faith that it almost seems odd. He didn't seem to ever lose hope. In verse 23, he says, and it implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live. What a hope, what a faith that Jairus had. Hebrews 13:6 says, so that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. In this story, I want you to think about the instructions that Jesus gave Jairus. He gave him two very simple instructions. And it's in verse 36. Do not be afraid, only believe. If you're parenting, if you're going to parent someday, there's going to be a time when your enemy's going to come against you and you're going to think that we need to be afraid at this point. Don't be afraid, only believe. The two instructions that Jesus gave Jairus before he went to his house and healed his daughter. Do not be afraid, only believe. Will you stand with me, please?